Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And here are the questions on the floor of the Senate and for everyone in America today. What did America know about terrorism and how did it learn it? What did the CIA do to terror suspects and why did the Congress know about it in time? And what do we know now and why has it taken so long for the people of the U.S. to learn it if we ever get to see the truth about CIA torture tactics at all? Senator Dianne Feinstein said on the Senate floor today that she means to get the country there.
It's been very difficult, but I believe the documentation and the findings and conclusions will make clear how this program was morally, legally, and administratively misguided, and that this nation should never again engage in these tactics.
Following a long political fight, Feinstein's Senate Select Committee on Intelligence released an executive summary on the CIA's use of enhanced interrogation techniques, that famous phrase we've come to know as a euphemism for torture. We also learned about the practice of extraordinary rendition, capture of suspects, and transporting them to a third country for interrogation. Techniques and tactics all implemented during the George W. Bush administration, an era that apparently began with these remarks by Vice President Dick Cheney in a conversation with the late newsman Tim Russert on Meet the Press back in September of 2001.
It is a mean, nasty, dangerous, dirty business out there, and we have to operate in that arena. I'm convinced we can do it. We can do it successfully, but we need to make certain that we have not tied the hands, if you will, of our intelligence communities in terms of accomplishing their mission.
These terrorists play by a whole set of different rules. It's going to force us, in your words, to get mean, dirty, and nasty in order to take them on.
Right.
That's Vice President Dick Cheney speaking on September 16th, 2001. Today's Senate report is basically an attempt to close the chapter that began with 9/11. Continued with the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, the opening of the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center, and everything that flowed from the emotional, tragic, terrified reaction to the events of September 11th, 2001. Is this report old news? Are there new revelations? Does the long saga of Congress's battles with the CIA and the White House to release this report tell the story of an Obama administration reversing on transparency in the war on terror? This hour, we'll talk at length about the report, what it tells us about our practices of interrogation and torture in the war on terror, and whether Americans ultimately have a right to know about covert operations. To start us off, Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, John.
So this is a really important moment for Dianne Feinstein. Today is the culmination of years of work.
There's no question about it. The genesis of this report, of course, goes all the way back to late 2001 after the attacks of September 11th. The Senate Intelligence Committee started getting involved with this issue directly in 2007, a couple of years after they heard that CIA officials had burned videotapes of enhanced interrogation. Once Senator Feinstein and her Democratic colleagues, in fact, some of her Republican colleagues on the Intelligence Committee found out about that, they launched a full-scale investigation. This report was launched officially in 2009 and was complete more than 2 years ago, John, and it's been over the last 2 years an extensive amount of wrangling, fighting, and negotiation, not only with the CIA, but also with the White House, with a White House and a president that said they supported, fully supported the compilation and release of this report in an unclassified form, but all the while negotiating, wrangling, trying to hold back Senator Feinstein in many ways from releasing a full report. And she finally gets it out today, I should add, just a couple of weeks before she is no longer chairman of that committee. Republicans, of course, taking over the Intelligence Committee when they take over the Senate in early January.
Right. Well, regardless of the arguments with the White House, there's no holding back on certain individuals named in the report. Dianne Feinstein particularly talks about former CIA Director Michael Hayden.
The description in the cables of CIA's interrogations and the treatment of detainees presented a starkly different picture from Director Hayden's testimony before the committee. They describe brutal, around-the-clock interrogations, especially of Abu Zubaydah, in which multiple coercive techniques were used in combination and with substantial repetition.
What you heard there in that clip was not an edit. It was actually just a sort of an electronic glitch that took place as the senator was speaking on the Senate floor. Is she accusing Michael Hayden of lying to the committee?
She's accused Michael Hayden of lying to the committee before. It's not the first time. She also got an apology over the summer out of CIA Director John Brennan when he had to apologize to the committee and to the Senate after Feinstein accused CIA lawyers and tech people and officials of spying on Senate officials and Senate staffers on their computers when they were compiling this very report. So it's Hayden, it's Brennan, other CIA officials by name as well. The brutal treatment that Feinstein was just talking about of Abu Zubaydah and other people. Senator Feinstein detailed on the Senate floor how from August 4th to August 21st of 2002, consistently, and for that entire 2.5 week period, Abu Zubaydah was subjected to abuse in Afghanistan at the hands of the CIA. The report details, John, a CIA facility called Cobalt, which people there called a salt pit, where detainees were kept in isolated cells, shackled to the walls, according to the report, had loud music blasted at them with only a bucket for human waste beside them, kept in the dark, abused physically, punched and slapped on their way down a hallway to interrogation. Those are just some of the new brutal details detailed in the report.
And she, you know, takes personal sort of shame from this. She says the United States cannot do these kinds of tactics and should never do it again. Does this report ensure that that will be the case, or does it simply underscore something that will probably go on?
Well, that, I mean, how can we predict the future about that? What we can say is that President Obama, when he took over as president in 2009, explicitly outlawed torture by name and some of the techniques that are included by executive order, and Congress has passed some legislation since these programs were discontinued. Feinstein says her hope is to prevent the CIA or other intelligence officials or anyone in the United States from ever returning to similar tactics, no matter what the security conditions dictate. She said that on the Senate floor today, that she insists that the United States never return to them. Now, can we predict the future about whether or not that ever would happen? No, of course not. But it's her aim to prevent that ever from taking place again.
And I saw a tweet from John Kerry, Secretary of State John Kerry, or someone quoting John Kerry saying, this report should not characterize the nature of the U.S. intelligence record. But for the time being, it certainly is going to characterize what the CIA did during the Bush administration. Todd Zwillick, thanks so much.
Pleasure, John.
The release of this report tells secrets and outlines some controversies that other nations around the world might have preferred to leave under wraps, whether it's more fuel for longstanding enemies of the U.S. or allies who carried out some of the covert operations at the behest of the Bush White House. This is a troubling day. David Sanger, national security correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, says that it could get hot back home for some allied leaders.
There are two foreign government issues out here, John. One of them is that there were some foreign governments that hosted black sites where some of this interrogation took place, and they'll have a hard time explaining why they cooperated in the way that they did. This has been a big issue, for example, in Poland. Now, Poland is not a place where you would expect that there would be a Benghazi-like problem. But you could imagine in the Middle East how this could be used for propaganda purposes by ISIS and others, especially at a time that we are accusing ISIS of truly brutal methods.
As a longtime observer of all of this, what do you think is the more serious charge? What the CIA did, according to this report, or that the CIA acted as a kind of rogue agency all on its own, according to this report?
What the CIA did, I think we've known in its broad stroke. To my mind, the question of whether the CIA acted beyond its mandate, even from the Bush administration, even loose as that mandate may have been, is in many ways the more important issue, because it gets to the question of whether all these decades of improving civilian oversight of the CIA are actually working.
And, you know, at the end of the day, thinking back to the Oliver North case, and he certainly thought he had permission to do what he was doing and was prosecuted for it, there's always going to be somebody at the CIA who believes that they have permission to do something questionable, because that seems to be the culture that's been created, and the Obama administration isn't necessarily going to be able to change that. An assessment from you?
No, I think that's right. And if you go back to the memoirs that were written by some of the people who were involved in these operations, they are all pretty explicit that they believed that they had some cover for their activity. So it's very possible that they thought that they were given a broad mandate. And secondly, you have to remember, the CIA is an institution that you want to have taking risks. If you don't take risks, you don't do the bin Laden operation, right? Highly, highly risky operation, could have easily gone bad, and in the end it was a success, and as a result, it is considered among one of the great successes of the agency. But that requires a risk-taking culture, and I think that one of the concerns that the CIA director, John Brennan, who's very close to President Obama, has is that the seeming punishment of those, even those who may have acted beyond the law, would over the long term so change the culture of the CIA that it would become too cautious.
You know, without enhancing your career in any sense, I was going through my office today and I opened your book, Confront and Conceal, that you wrote about the Obama White House. And I'm just wondering, in the choice of words, do you think at the end of the day, the Obama administration has confronted the CIA, or have they chosen to really stick with the concealment?
There's been a mix of the two. I think that early on, there was a fair bit of sense of confrontation. And then the president began to back away some. You know, if you look at what the Obama administration has done to water down some specific elements of this report, just the battle over redactions, it would tell you that they've been closer on this issue to where the Senate Republicans have been than they really have been to where President Obama was early in his campaign.
David Sanger, national security correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, John.